and turn to Esther chapter 6. Esther chapter 6. Here in this 10-chapter book, this is a very pivotal book, and everything gets turned on its head from what has been previous up to this point. Whereas up to this point, the wicked Haman had been either on the rise or already on the top. But Haman peaked out in chapter 5, and now he is going to start a rapid descent. Whereas the righteous Mordecai has been very down, and he doesn't even realize it, but there's plan by the wicked Haman to have him executed this very morning of this Esther chapter 6, in between these two feasts that Queen Esther has set up. But God is going to intervene in this, and the providence of God, and as we've mentioned several times, God is never mentioned in any of the text here, and prayer is not mentioned in any of the text, but the providence of God is shown all in this entire book, and it's nowhere even more so prominent than here in Esther chapter 6. Kaufman wrote an introduction and maybe more of an overview of this Esther chapter 6, and I thought that I would read that first. And he titled this, "Haman Gets the Shock of His Life. The higher they are, the farther they fall." And he wrote, "There is hardly anything in the literature of mankind that presents a more drastic contrast of the highest status and the lowest ever attained by a man in one single day than that which is here revealed in the person of Haman, the great prime minister of the Persian Empire under Xerxes. On the morning of that crucial day, he was at the very pinnacle of his power and glory, anticipating that within that very day, he would execute his most hated enemy, enjoy a banquet along with the king himself in the apartment of the queen of Persia, supposing, as his advisors had suggested, that he would hang Mordecai and then go merrily with the king to the banquet." So that's what he thought that he was going to do this morning and this day was hang the righteous Mordecai, that's his arch nemesis, at least at this time. I want to say that this wicked man probably had many arch nemesis all through his life. But at this moment in time, his most the person he hates the most is this Mordecai the Jew, this righteous man. And it's because he did not show any preferential treatment to him that he thought that he was owed by everyone, except, I guess, the king. And so he was going to kill him this morning is his plan, and then go merrily with the king to the banquet, which is what his wife had told him and suggested. And so that's what his plan was. He thought that this is a good plan, but things are going to get turned on its head. So Kaufman continues, "However, during the previous night, God had been at work to prevent this evil scheme of the devil as he was attempting to remove the Jews from the face of the earth." So this was Satan trying to remove the messianic lineage before the Messiah could ever be born. And but God is providentially working in the background is going to thwart Satan's plan here. "Before the sun went down, Haman would be hanged on his own cross. His hated enemy Mordecai, the Jew, would be appointed in his place, and Haman's posterity of 10 sons would be destroyed. Haman's wife would see a crucifixion all right, but not that of Mordecai, which she was a bloodthirsty herself, and she was wanting this crucifixion to take place. And anyway, Kaufman's comment was, well, she's going to get to see one, but it's going to be her own husband, not of an enemy of theirs. Where in the literature of all nations is there anything else that compares with such a dramatic reversal of one's status as that which is recorded here? Of course, Haman knew that Mordecai was a Jew, but it seems that Haman considered it beneath his dignity to satisfy his hatred with a single individual. As a result, he had determined to destroy the whole Jewish nation. So just destroying and killing his rival or one enemy was not enough for him. He wanted to take out the whole people of the whole Jewish nation. Everyone that was in the lineage of the Jew, he wanted to eliminate all of them from the face of the earth. This man was so hated just because his hatred of one man. There were several things that the wicked Haman did not know. He did not know that the command he had convinced Xerxes to send across the Persian Empire would also result in the murder of the queen. He might have been able to execute even her, however, if he had refrained from his desire to murder Mordecai. Also, he did not know that Mordecai had saved the king's life, nor that the record was written in the chronicles of the king, nor did he know that the king had encountered a sleepless night, and nor did he know that the king would be interested in rewarding Mordecai at the very moment when Haman would appear for the purpose of asking the king's permission to crucify Mordecai. Speaking of surprises, where was there ever anything that matched the shock that confronted Haman on his way to go merrily with the king to the banquet? So, we thought that he titled this appropriately as being that Haman was going to get the shock of his life. So, we'll start in Esther chapter 6, verse 1. That night, the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. So this is the historical records that was of the Persian Empire that the king or was set up to record. So they had a record of everything that had happened for the history of the Persian Empire. And it is the providence of God is right here in the verse 1. God was the reason why the king could not sleep to cause this book to be read. And then the second thing that's right here in this next verse, that it was also the providence of God. Of all the history of the Persian Empire or the Persian people that could have possibly have been read, there just happened to going to read to the king about this Jewish man that saves the king's life, that there was a conspiracy that was going to take him out, and the righteous Mordecai ended up hearing about this plan and was able to stop it. Okay, so that's the providence of God there. So verse 2, and it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. Then the king said, what honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? And the king's servants who attended him said, nothing has been done for him. So, when he saved the king's life, nothing had been done. There was no reward. There was no ceremony. No thank you. Nothing. And probably historically this is has been repeated over and over and over. Many good things probably were done for the royalty that never got even as little as a thank you, and much less anything more. But now we're working under the providence of God, and this is not going to go unnoticed now. And this is going to play a prominent role here. So, verse 4. Like an abrupt change happens here with this. And what is stated here. So the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So if this was a play, or this is like in a play, that a narrator would either tell what is happening, or you would see on the stage somebody try to come in. What it seems like to me, but none of the commentators mention this, is this is obviously very early in the morning. I'm going to say the king is still in bed. Obviously, what I feel like he was wanting is the servants to read to him the chronicles and the history of the Persian Empire so he can go to sleep. But that doesn't happen. In fact, it seems like it's the opposite, and it wakes him up and it really gets his mind to working. So I am going to say that it is still so early in the morning when Haman comes in that it's probably still dark. And so that's how what makes the most sense to me, why the king says here in the middle of talking about this, who is in the court? Either a door has shut, or he heard some steps of somebody coming in, but you couldn't tell who it was. I'm going to say most likely because it was dark and you couldn't see. And so the servants found out who it was, and that here it is, it's Haman coming in. He's either coming in to work early, or what the king doesn't know, he actually has a request. But the king does not let Haman get to the point of asking a request. So verse 5, the king's servant said to him, "Haman is there standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king asked, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me? He's the king's right-hand man." And just previously, within the last week or so, Haman has been able to convince him to eliminate a whole nation of people. And a decree at this very moment is being sent out to the ends of this Persian Empire to command this done at the end of the year. And so Haman's on cloud nine thinking, well, look at this. Here we're going to get to execute the rival of my ancestors and the lineage and the people of my hated enemy, at least for right now, the one that offended me the day before. And so the king ought to honor me. There shouldn't be anyone more than me that he would wish to honor. That's what he's thinking, but things are about to get turned. So verse 7, and Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of the one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on the horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Then the king said to Haman, hurry, take the robe and the horse, as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai, the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken. So, something else that obviously the king learned new in this account being read to him, or maybe a question that the king asked, he has found out that Mordecai is a Jew. Now, he still does not know that his wife is a Jew and is related to Mordecai, but that will come out here in the next chapter. And so, as a result, Haman, now, he has started his fall right here. In fact, he feels a deep humiliation. He thinks he's coming in and this is going to be one of the great days of his life. And then as soon as he enters the king's court, he thinks that it's even going to get better, because now he thinks he's going to get paraded all through the city. And everybody is going to, it's going to get proclaimed to everyone that he is some great man. But now, he's going to have to be the one that leads his enemy all through town. And understand and imagine how humiliated he seems. And we're about to find out, he tells his wife and his friends how humiliated he is. So, verse 11, so Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, and led him on horseback through the city square, and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. So he had to proclaim this all through the city. Okay, now verse 12. Afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate. So he went back to his very humble, lowly position that he was, his job that he did for the king. After this great honor, he wasn't going to a big banquet or anything. It wasn't anything past that. So here he gets this great honor, but then he goes back and does his regular daily job. But Haman hurried to his house mourning and with his head covered. So now he's acting like he lost his wife or one of his children. And he's in a deep state of mourning and humiliation. Verse 13. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. Now, this is somewhat remarkable. His wife and his friends have just foretold exactly what's going to happen. They said that now he is going to fall before Mordecai, and that he will not beat Mordecai now. And that's exactly what happens. And it goes fast, because he's going to be dead here within hours and in this next chapter. And so this chapter ends with verse 14. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. So he did go with the king to the banquet, but it was not merrily. So he had a bad report to give to his wife and friends, and then they, in turn, had a bad report to give to him, said, well, if this has happened to you, you are not going to, you're going to fall before your enemy instead of your enemy falling before you. And so we'll see what happens next week. But things are falling apart quickly for the wicked Haman. And Lord willing, we will start it with chapter 7 next week.